What is the worst thing that could happen to you? Lose your job? Lose a loved one? Maybe come down with some incurable disease? Today on Storyline, we meet someone who lost everything and yet survived and even grew through the pain and the questions. Welcome to Storyline. I'm Chantel Klingbeil, and I'm so glad that you've joined me. Whether or not this is your first time watching Storyline, I hope that you feel a part of this program as we dig deep into the lives of Bible characters. We're coming to you live. Now, this means that if you want to ask a question or contribute to the program, you can do so throughout our show. It's simple, and you can do it in a variety of ways. You can toll-free 888-9-STORYLINE or use 707-200-1070 to call or to text. And if you want more instant interaction, you can find it. Just look on Storyline on Facebook. Storyline is all about stories, and we all like a good story. The Bible contains a collection of the greatest accounts. It covers everything. Adventure, romance, war, natural and man-made disasters. You name it, the Bible has it. In Storyline, we focus on the special Bible people and the problems they faced. We step into their world, we study their challenges, their pain, and their victories. As we understand these Bible characters, we want to learn practical lessons for our lives. The best part of it all is that even in the difficult, complex storylines, we find a God who loves us intensely and immensely. Maybe it was when you got your finger caught in a door, or maybe when you got that unexpected phone call with tragic news. We can all identify with our main character in today's narrative. We all know about pain and loss. And we all wonder at some time, why me? Job had more to lose than most of us. There's a whole book of the Bible dedicated to Job's pain and loss. Now, we'll only be able to concentrate on the first two chapters and the last two chapters of the book of Job. That would be, if you want to follow along in your Bible, Job 1 and 2, and then you jump forward to chapter 41 and 42. But first, let's rewind way back to one of the oldest stories. In the land of Uz lived a man named Job. He was an honest man, a man of his word. He was totally devoted to God. He was a wealthy man too, and his wealth began at home. He had 7 sons and 3 beautiful daughters. And he owned 7,000 sheep, 4,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, and 500 donkeys. And he had a large number of servants. He was the most influential man in all of the East. The family, they were very cohesive. There was no in-house fighting amongst them. The brothers used to take turns holding family feasts in their home, and they would invite their 3 sisters. Job was clearly the spiritual head of his family. Even though the children were grown and had homes of their own, he would sacrifice for each of his children and pray for them, even though they were not problem kids. Life was good for Job, almost too good. One day, a servant stumbled into Job's house. The oxen were plowing and the donkeys were grazing nearby, And the Sabaeans attacked and carried them all off. They killed the servants, and I'm the only one who's escaped to tell you. While he was still speaking, another servant staggered in and said, "Bolts of lightning struck the sheep, and they burnt the shepherds and the sheep. I'm the only one who's escaped to tell you this." Messenger number two was still speaking when messenger number three arrived. "The Chaldeans formed three raiding parties and swept down on your cows. They carried them all off. They killed the servants too, and I am the only one who's escaped to tell you this." While he was still speaking, the next messenger arrived. Job recognized him. He was a servant of his oldest son. "Your sons and daughters were together at the oldest son's house. Suddenly, a tornado struck the house. It collapsed on them. They're dead, all of them. I'm the only one who's escaped to tell you." At this, Job staggered to his feet, and he did what any one of us would do. He mourned. We may express ourselves a little different in our cultures, but when we face loss, we're all hurt. Job tore his robe, shaved his head, and then he did something unexpected. Job fell to the ground and worshipped. He said, "Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I will leave. God gives, God takes, God's name be ever blessed." Not once through all of this did Job blame God or turn his back on him. Then, it wasn't finished for Job. Job was struck with terrible sores right from the soles of his feet to the top of his head. They itched and oozed so badly that Job took a piece of broken pottery and scraped himself with it. As he sat among the ashes, his wife came to him and said, "Are you still holding on to your integrity? Just curse God and die." Job said, "No. We accept the good days from God. Why not also the bad days?" Job's three friends eventually came to comfort him. When they saw him sitting on that heap of ashes, infected with sores from the crown of his head right down to the soles of his feet, they were so moved that they sat with him for 7 days. 7 days of silence. 7 days to try to understand why. Why Job? Why this tragedy? 7 days before they began to speak. What stuns me about Job's story is the speed at which tragedy strikes. As one messenger is speaking, the next runs up with more bad news, and it just keeps coming. Soon he has nothing more to lose. And then he gets that painful skin disease. Sometimes tragedies strike with the same speed today. I just think of the tsunami or the earthquake. Today we have with us Matt Herzl. Matt has been close to the big scale tragedies. He brings us into the sights, the sounds, and the experiences of those who've lost everything. So stay with us. We'll be back in a minute. Herzl works in fundraising for Adventist Development and Relief Agency. And as part of his job, he travels to relief projects around the world to get stories, photos, and video footage. So thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
I'm glad you're not out and about.
Yeah, me too.
Right now.
It's good to be here.
Great. Now, we saw plenty of pictures. It was last year? right?
2 years ago.
It was 2 years already.
Already 2 years since the Haiti earthquake.
And that was a big one, and we were inundated with it.
Yeah.
And you were one of the first outsiders on the scene.
Yeah, we sent a team from ADRA just 3 days after the earthquake to kind of assess the situation and see what we needed to do and start some relief efforts. And it was, you know, we couldn't fly in because the airport was closed. And we actually had to fly into the Dominican Republic and then drive in. And when we drove into the city of Port-au-Prince, it was just, it was a mess.
And those were some of the pictures that you took?
Yes.
Right when you got in?
Yeah.
So it was absolute chaos when you arrived there initially.
Yeah, and in fact, I'm riding along in the bus that we took in, and it really seemed like scenes out of a movie or something. It was just
surreal.
Incredible devastation, and even the pictures don't really do justice to
the pictures are horrific enough.
Yeah, and it's very difficult to really get it across in pictures or in stories, but just incredible. You know, everywhere you looked, you saw people digging through rubble trying to find family members that may have been buried, and just tragedy everywhere.
I guess it was, even for someone who's seen this before, it was mind-boggling.
Yeah, and in fact, I really got kind of thrown into the deep end because it was my first experience going to a relief area after a disaster. And so it really hit me very hard, you know, to see such tragedy and loss. And, you know, when you see it at first, it's the scale of it is just astounding. And then when we started to walk around and find out, do needs assessments and find out what people needed, you start hearing the stories. And every single person had an incredibly tragic story to tell.
And a different story to tell over here. It was sort of seeing Job's story over and over and over and over.
Yeah, exactly.
Thousands of times again.
Yeah.
Now, you're a picture guy. You're a visual guy.
Yeah.
Is there one particular snapshot that you've kept with you mentally?
Well, you know, it was challenging because you're right that as a photographer, every picture that I take tends to stick in my mind. Mm. I can remember vividly every single frame.
Wow.
And it sort of haunted me for a while, some of the things that I don't even show to other people. But there was one incident I remember when we visited, our very first stop actually, the day we drove in, was a hospital, Adventist-run hospital in Port-au-Prince. And there was a young girl who was receiving treatment in a lot of pain, and she was just sobbing. And I'm trying to be professional, sensitive, take a few pictures with the family, and I just started crying. It just kind of hit me all at once, you know, and just incredible devastation and tragedy. It's hard to comprehend.
Now, for these people and for Job, their world ended at a specific moment.
Yeah.
It felt like their world ended at that
just
moment.
Just out of the blue.
Out of the blue. But actually, the world wasn't ending. A whole new way of life had to begin.
That's right.
One that they didn't choose and one that they didn't want.
Starting from nothing.
Starting from nothing. So what were the things, or what are the things that you really need when you lose everything?
Yeah. Well, we have some things here. These are all things that you and I really take for granted.
Absolutely.
Very basic food staples and things that we have in our house every day. But we have potatoes, we have rice, sugar.
What is this? What?
This is flour.
Flour over here.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so, you know, when somebody's house collapses in the earthquake, often their, you know, whatever food stores they had may have been gone, been destroyed. And of course, a lot of these people didn't have much to begin with anyway.
So that little bit is gone.
Exactly, actually.
What is this pink? Very pretty pink lace.
Yeah, it kind of looks like a lace dress or something silly, but it's actually a mosquito net.
And that's not silly.
No, it's actually very serious. In a lot of areas of the world, especially after disasters, when there's a lot of stagnant water, it's breeding ground for mosquitoes, and malaria is a huge problem. And so this is one of the things that ADRA distributes after disasters.
Yeah, it just kind of connects me back to Job's story. After he tragically loses everything, then he ends up sick.
That's right.
And I guess that's something that you want to prevent when you get there.
Yeah.
I mean, we couldn't do anything about the first disaster, but you want to help that people
don't
get sick.
Yeah.
And this blue thing over here has
Well, you know, the very first thing that ADRA did when we got into the country was we started establishing safe water points because clean water access was a big problem. And this is a life straw, so you simply just take off the top and you can drink any water, and it basically filters it
as you drink it out. Yeah. Wow. There's some things here that I would really not include in a care package. We have shoes.
Yeah, medical supplies. We gave out kitchen kits with pots and pans so they could have a fire. They could cook some of the basic
food
staples.
Right.
To keep them going.
And what's this?
You know, one of the things that I always think about if my house were to burn down, the things that I would be the most sad to lose would be my personal things, like a picture.
All your pictures,
your memories, all of it gone in an instant and just rubble.
Imagine losing memories.
That's right.
Did you experience this? It seems as if it really shook you up. It was your first experience. Did it shake your trust in God before you went there?
Yeah.
I'm thinking Job, seeing
this
all over again?
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, it wasn't a tragedy to me personally, but yet being in the midst of it was extremely traumatic.
You couldn't just switch off and handle it professionally,
right,
as you said.
Exactly. And it really did hit me very deeply. In fact, it's something I still try to come to terms with in my own life is, you know, how can such tragedy happen? With a loving God. And I think that's really what Job and his friends...
they spend many, many chapters.
Yeah, that's what they're wrestling with. And these are serious issues. And, you know, it's something that I still wrestle with myself sometimes. But it's important. You know, they're important questions to ask.
And so it's not questions that have quick, easy, pat, clean answers.
Not at all.
That we can flash around.
No, but, you know, I think back and... one of the memories that stays with me that's really been a source of inspiration was that at that same hospital the next day, I was walking around taking pictures and a young man came up to me named Colbert and he looked at
me. You remember his name?
Yes, it was etched in my memory. And I was talking to him a little bit, find out what, you know,
how did you communicate?
He spoke English.
He spoke English.
Yeah, okay. I don't speak any French or... He spoke English, and I was asking him how he did and if his family was okay. And what he told me really astounded me. He said, "Sir, I'm very blessed. Only my father has died."
Wow.
And it just hit me because in the midst of all of that, he still trusted God, and he still felt like he was blessed. And in fact, he spent the next several days in the hospital volunteering. He was there to try to find out how he could help. It's just... hits you.
I know if something happened to my dad, I wouldn't consider myself blessed.
No.
It would be quite,
how many of
quite
us would?
The other way. Yeah. And yet, he saw things with a different perspective because of the tragedy over here. I've heard stories of tragedy bringing out the best in people.
It really does. It's a test of who we really are. You know, it brings out our core, I think.
And that is spot on with our story of Job. It certainly brought out who he was and who his friends
absolutely.
Were. Well, Matt,
the good and the bad.
Matt, thanks so much for sharing your insights with us.
Absolutely.
I think you've showed us that one of such an ancient story is really not far from our headline news today. And it was great having you here. Thank you. Well, for Job, there was little initial help on the ground. Job sat on that ash heap, scratching at his painful sores and thinking the big questions that we were talking about. And then his friends come. After the break, we're back, not with Job's comforters, but with expert guests as we join Job in this quest for answers. So stay with us. We'll be right back. You know, TV watching can be a solitary activity, but not on Storyline. We have all sorts of tools to help us connect. You can call us, text us, find Storyline on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, download the app, or subscribe to the HD podcast. If Storyline has impacted you in some special way, or if you have a Bible story that you'd like us to tackle, please let us know. And a big thank you to everyone who's contacted Storyline with comments and questions. We really enjoy hearing from you. Job's friends have had some bad press over the years. I'm sure you've heard the expression, Job's comforters, for people that aren't any comfort at all. Now, happily on Storyline, we don't have any Job's comforters. We have great experts who are also friends and even family, to help us tackle some of the most difficult questions that Job's story brings to light. A big welcome to Pastor Rob and Chris Long. We've had Rob on Storyline before, so welcome back. We're glad that you brought this lovely lady along with you this evening, too.
Yes, nice to be sitting next to her.
Rob and Chris are passionate about the Bible, and I believe that Job's story is one of their favorites. So, again, a real pleasure to have you.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
Glad to be here again.
Well, we have someone else here this evening as well, Pastor John Ross, who also happens to be my brother. You could probably see the family resemblance. He's visiting us all the way from California, and so I couldn't pass up on the great opportunity of getting him in with us on the show to share his expertise. So thank you for letting me drag you on set.
Thank you, Chantel. It's a real privilege and joy to be on Storyline.
Is it your favorite show?
One of my favorites.
Good answer.
That was very diplomatic, wasn't it?
Yeah,
yes,
it was.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, most of our Bible stories we can actually date, mm-hmm. and we have a lot of background information. But Job is a kind of a dubious story to begin with. This land of Uz that nobody's quite heard of, mm-hmm. and no date. Mm. Why do you think the Bible records it in this way? Mm.
Well, the book seems to sort of transcend history, geography, ethnicity, and I think it's really an ancient book. You know, some people really believe that it was the first book ever written, even before Genesis. And it's kind of a source book. Mm-hmm. You know, it gets to the origin of blessing being God, the origin of evil, presenting Satan mm-hmm. as the instigator of all evil. And it's the source book to tell us, you know, answer the biggest question that humans face, mm-hmm. the problem of human suffering, and give the answer to that.
So this is an old question that's still absolutely relevant today.
It's a timeless theme that goes on and on and on. It touches everybody's life.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I think you'd be very, very fortunate if you went through life without pain and suffering. Mm. I don't even know if I know of anyone.
That's a book yet to be written. That's not happened yet, no.
Mm. That would be probably like the writer of Ecclesiastes says, better the day of death than the day of birth kind of thing. Mm. Someone who's died real young has escaped all of the tragedy, and yet we consider a death like that a real tragedy.
Mm. Yeah.
So no one gets away. Well, you said it answers the big question. Does the story of Job really answer the question, why do bad things happen?
Well, you know, I think the story of Job pulls back the curtain, the veil, if you like, mm-hmm. to understand the great controversy that's taking place in our world. It brings to view an adversary, somebody who is against God and is against those who trust in God. And Job points out who the one is that brings catastrophe and sorrow and death and suffering, and that's revealed to be Satan.
That's pretty interesting. On insurance forms, I think there's certain acts of God, right? That are not insured or are insured. Mm-hmm. I guess the book of Job kind of refutes those acts of God clause.
You know, your question, does it tell why bad things happen? I like to think of Job as a book that tells us why good things happen.
Mm. No, now how could that be?
Well, we see at the beginning of the book that as soon as God withdraws his protection from Job, he loses everything. He loses his house, he loses his family, he loses his health. And I think it's telling us that if it weren't for God's protective care over us every moment, we'd all experience that. Mm-hmm. And so it's not only about why bad things happen, but it shows us that it's only because of God's grace that good things happen in this world.
So it sure gives us a different picture, a different take on the whole question. Mm-hmm. Instead of why me, it's wake up in the morning and it's why me that I'm alive and that I'm well and that I'm not experiencing something life-threatening today. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I've never looked at the book of Job quite from that very positive point of view. Do you think Job got any of that?
I don't think so. I think that the characters in Job were in the dark, so to speak, and Job wrestled with the issue of who and what, but he did not have the perspective that God gave us as we've read the book.
You know, we have chapter 1 of Job that kind of explains a little bit about what's happening in this meeting in heaven, and Satan makes certain accusations against God. And mm-hmm. if you like, God's reputation is on the line. Yeah. And here Job is, suddenly all these things begin to happen to him. He doesn't know about this meeting in heaven.
No.
And that's the beauty of the story, that despite all of these things that are happening, he knew enough about God. He knew enough about God's personality and his character. And he learned to trust in God in the midst of trial. And that's the lesson we can really take from the story. God understands, he knows he's in charge, and we can trust in him.
So it's really the essence of love, trust.
Yes.
And trust means not always knowing all the answers, but knowing the person well enough to hang on.
That's right.
Yes.
And you know, one thing that came out in the story to me, Chantal, is that Job had two things. He had piety, meaning righteousness or holiness, and he had prosperity. And Satan was arguing that Job's piety was only a result of his prosperity. Take away his prosperity, and he'll give up his piety. But through the story, we see that it was just the reverse. Job's prosperity was actually a result of his piety that he had first. They tried to take the prosperity away.
Went the other way around.
And his piety remained. So I think he knew that he was being blessed by God all his life, but as to why those blessings suddenly disappeared, I think he was really struggling to figure that out. But God was working through it all to make a good point.
To make a point here. Yeah. Now, let's move on from Job to his friends, because they speak. I mean, we haven't had time for it, but they do, I don't know, about 30 chapters of talking in between. Yeah. So they're a big chunk of it over here. Mm-hmm. They don't seem to be the very comforting sort. If we have a look at Job 16, at least they weren't very comforting to Job. Mm-mm. We have a look at Job 16, verse 1. It's kind of interesting. Job says, I've heard many such things. Miserable comforters you all are. Shall words of wind have an end? he really doesn't seem to think too much of their speeches. What's wrong with them? Some of them are beautifully eloquent.
Yes. Some of their speeches are beautifully eloquent.
Yes.
Yes, yes.
What's wrong with them? Why aren't they delivering on the goods for Job?
Well, you know, they come with good intentions. They travel from, we don't know how far they were from where Job was, but they heard about the calamities that happened to him, and they said, well, let's go comfort our friend. The Bible describes that when they actually got to where Job is, they were amazed. They hardly recognized the man with all of the boils and all the things that had happened to him. But they did what so often we do. We begin to look at a person's tragedy and begin to think, well, the reason these things are happening must be because of something they did. And in the case of Job, these three friends said, Job, there must be some hidden sin that you need to confess. These are judgments that's come from God. And you know, they were quite adamant at times, saying, Job, you've got to admit, you know, what did you do?
and it wasn't just a little sin. If you're getting punished on this scale, it must
that's
be pretty
awesome.
Big
sin.
Sins.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's probably why they were so eager to pry these sins out of Job.
Yeah.
Does it really matter as a comforter? Did they really have to find the cause of his sins? Do you think that would have brought comfort?
No. And
Job?
Job, you know, it's best, I think, to find it in the mouth of the one who's suffering the greatest, who would know what the best comforter would be. And he goes on to say, well, I also could speak like
you're reading from chapter 16?
Yes, I'm in 16, and I'm starting in verse 4. I also could speak like you if you were in my place. I could make fine speeches against you and shake my head at you, but my mouth would encourage you. Comfort from my lips would bring you relief. So that's what Job is looking for in a friend to comfort.
So a slightly different,
yes.
He doesn't need interrogation.
No.
Of course, I can identify with Job, but then if I think back, we are well trained to work from cause to effect.
Right.
And that's the first thing we want to do in a tragedy. Cause effect always work?
Not in all cases. And, you know, the three friends of Job, they weren't unique in trying to figure out the problem here. There must be something wrong, some sin that you committed. We have the story in the New Testament where the disciples came to Jesus and they had just passed a man that was born blind. You read this in John 9. And they say to Jesus, who sinned? Did this man's parents sin or did he sin that he was born blind? So they also had the idea that when bad things happen, it's because of some bad thing that you did. And I like the response that Jesus gives. Jesus said his parents didn't sin, nor did he sin, but that the works of God might be revealed in him. So God looked at the situation and said, this is a blessing that I can turn this into a blessing.
Mm-hmm. Turn it into a blessing. Well, we are talking about the moment that Job's world fell apart in Job 1 and 2. It didn't seem like a blessing. I think we all pose the why question when bad things happen to us. It would be lovely to be able to just confront God and ask. Job does. And God answers. What does God say? Does he answer Job's question? After the break, we look at this question and more. So stay with us. We'll be right back. In case you've just joined us, we're discussing Job's story. And we are hitting the big question over here. We all pose this why question when bad things happen to us. And I think we all would love to actually confront God and ask him and have him answer. And this actually happens in Job's story. God actually takes time out to answer Job. Does he answer the why question?
He doesn't really seem to answer that question directly. And I think as I was thinking about this story, when God finally shows up at the end, it reminds me like if there was a toddler that had, you know, some ability to reason and realize that the child, he or she had been abandoned by a parent, just felt alone, didn't know where mom or dad was, and, you know, felt fear and anxiety.
I think all of us as parents can identify with that.
Confusion and bewilderment. So if a parent comes in then, the child may or may not ask why, you know, why did that happen? They're more comforted by the presence of the parent being back, that why question kind of goes away. And I think that's what happened with Job. When God showed up and his presence was there, the why question became less important. And it was really, he had a bigger picture of God and how much he needed God and his presence and how much it meant to him that sort of resolved the situation.
And another thought that, you know, suffering is a very sacred thing. I mean, when we're dealing with... Well, not grasping the right word, but, you know, people are suffering at a certain level, and it's very easy to talk about it when we're not suffering ourselves.
Okay.
So we have to tread very carefully as people who are listening are suffering. But sometimes I think the answer is that the answer is too big for us to understand. And Job makes a comment at the end, and he says in chapter 42, he says, "Surely I spoke of things I did not understand, things too wonderful for me to know." I think it's good to grapple
with. Sorry, what verse were you reading?
That is in verse 3.
Chapter 42, verse 3.
Yeah.
That's a great verse.
And I think that while it's good to grapple with it, to try to understand, to help people, I think there are dimensions of it that we will not understand until we see God face to face. And I don't know if that's comforting, but...
If it's a loving parent, as Rob was pointing out, I think there's someone to hold on to.
Yes.
At least.
Yes, that's right.
You know, the response God gives to Job is so different than something I would give. I mean, I would probably sit down and say, "Job, now let me explain. You see, there was this meeting in heaven. Satan made these actions." God doesn't do any of that.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, God's response at first doesn't even seem very sympathetic. He begins by saying, "Who is this that darkens counsel, speaking words without wisdom?" And then God goes on, not to explain the great controversy, but he begins to talk of his creative power, how he made everything and how big he is and how powerful he is and how glorious he is. And he never really answers the question of why Job's suffering. God just tells him how good he is. And at the end of that experience, Job is so overwhelmed by how big God is, and yet God cares about him as an individual. That strengthens Job's trust in God to say, I'm going to hold on no matter what. And that's kind of what we need. We don't always need the answer. We need to know who's there to hold us through the trial.
Yes. That's true.
Well, we know that God sometimes does punish. And in this story, we see the devil also involved in tragedy. Now, I'd love to be able to hang on But sometimes it's very difficult to figure out when tragedy strikes. Is this punishment from God, or is this the devil at work in my life? If it's the devil at work in my life, I can hang on to God. If it's not, I'm almost a little wary of God. How do I tell? I mean, they don't come with labels, tragedies.
Yeah. Well, we should make the point, I think, in this story that, you know, there are consequences of our choices, and sometimes mm-hmm. we do suffer on account of bad decisions that we make.
Cause and effect.
Yeah, cause and effect. And it's a healthy thing. You know, Paul says we should examine ourselves, whether we're in the faith. And, you know, in Psalm 139, David says, you know, search me and know my heart and try me and know my thoughts and see if there's any wicked way in me. And
so there's some of that self-examination.
Yeah, and I think Job does that. You know, he searches his heart. He can't come up with anything. Not that he's perfect, mm-hmm. but he's not cherishing any known sins that he can think of.
And nothing as big as would warrant this kind of mm-hmm. punishment.
Yeah, yeah, to confess. Okay. So that's a healthy thing to do. But, you know, there's more to the story.
I think we also need to recognize that we can't judge. We don't know. Yes, the human nature when trying to help somebody is to start finding the problem and saying, mm-hmm. well, maybe it's this or maybe it's that. We don't always know, and we need to trust God's leading. You know, I like the saying, when you can't see God's hand leading, you can trust His heart. Mm-hmm. And that's what the story of Job is all about. Even if you don't fully understand, God is still there, and He's still trustworthy. You can still hold on to Him. So a trial comes. You don't know whether it's coming from God or whether maybe this is coming from Satan. Maybe
right.
God's punishing you or disciplining. What do you do? Well, I think the response is the same.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's coming from Satan or whether this is discipline that God is using for our life, the response is the same. Turn to God. Run to God. Mm-hmm. Whatever the cause, the solution is always the same, and that's God.
Mm-hmm. If we think of it relationally, you know,
yes.
a child will always know if they're being disciplined by their father versus being attacked by a stranger.
You know, there's no.
Yeah, if you're being disciplined by your father, you know you've done something wrong.
Yes.
It's been pointed out, and now you're being corrected
uh-huh.
for a good reason, a redemptive purpose, hopefully. But if you're being attacked by a stranger, you're just not doing anything wrong, and just out of the blue, there's an
yes.
attack. And I think we need to have a relationship with God like that, that we know
Amen.
When we're being corrected by our father for a redemptive purpose versus just, you know, randomly being assaulted or persecuted by the devil.
And I guess the key over there is God can't be a stranger.
Mm-hmm.
Or else we really won't be able to tell the difference
right.
over
right.
here. You touched on it a little bit, but I guess we could look a little bit more closely at what can we do. We've been speaking about when I'm hurting, but what about when someone I love or someone around me is hurting? What can I do to help? Besides the physical things that we looked at the hands-on stuff, you know, actually providing food, providing clothing, getting involved. How else can we help someone?
In my most difficult times, and I've had a few serious trials come my way.
Mm-hmm.
One was a very severe depression. And the thing that helped me the most was when people would speak faith to me. I didn't look for answers from anybody necessarily. But when people spoke genuine faith and pointed me to a loving God, that was so much help. That was life support for me.
Someone helping you hang on.
Yes. Yes.
When you're not strong enough to hang on.
Reminding me of the promises. Yes.
So you weren't looking for answers?
No. No.
At that time?
Yeah.
I think it's helpful, too, to communicate to people that it's okay for them to process their feelings and emotions, even to God, like Job mm-hmm. does, you know, that he can express lamenting over the things that are happening, the confusion, the bewilderment.
And, even the anger.
It's actually kind of a form of worship. You know, just I was telling you before the program, I listened to this seminar by Michael Card,
mm-hmm.
and he's bringing that out, how lamenting can be a form of worship
yes.
because you're communicating with God, and then it resolves into a healthy relationship in the end. And you know, many of his songs bring that out in the wilderness, you
in
know,
the wilderness.
The joy in the journey, yeah. that type of thing.
Yeah. And our psalms are absolutely full of it
right.
over here. Now, the book ends with a almost happily ever after all this lamenting. But I wonder if this is really the way it works. After the break, our experts are going to help us explore this question and more. So stay with us. We'll be right back. We've been speaking about Job, the richest man in the East who lost absolutely everything. And then he regains everything at the end of the story. It's really your classical happily ever after. As a matter of fact, he has double of everything he had before, and he gets 7 sons and 3 beautiful daughters again. Have you seen that in real life? Is that the way it really works?
Not yet.
Not yet?
I'm counting on it. That will happen when the Lord comes. We know that that's going to be the end of the story. But in this life, when good comes, I'll be happy for that also.
But it's not always a happily ever after.
No.
And even in this case, I'm sure those new sons and daughters couldn't replace the ones he lost. He still had a great sense of grief over the loss of his children. But, you know, as Chris is pointing out, ever after, you know, you think about ever after being eternity, well, it will end happily ever after. And I think that's what the resurrection promises us. Even with the book of Job, Job's situation resolves in his lifetime. But for many people, it doesn't. But with the resurrection of Christ, we see that the situation can be resolved for everybody, if not in this life, in the life to come. Which I think is why Paul says, without that resurrection of Christ, we're most miserable. We might as well eat, drink, be merry, for tomorrow we die. But we do have that hope.
So the hope is everything, really.
Yes.
Right.
And this story of Job is kind of a little preview at the end, with things getting as good as they get down here, to kind of give us that taste for how good they're going to get.
Well, you see that in Job's comments. During his trial, during the hard times, he says, I know my Redeemer lives, and that I shall stand at the end. He speaks about a resurrection that God's promised. That's what sustains him. You know the song we like to sing, we have this hope that burns within our heart, hope in the coming of the Lord. Without that hope, where would we be? That is the Christian hope.
I was wondering if you were going to sing that one for us.
No, you won't hear that from me, at least not now. But it is our hope. That's what we're all about. Amen. We believe in the coming of Jesus. And on that day, he's going to make everything right. No more pain, no more sorrow, no more tears. And that's the wonderful promise that we have as Christians.
Amen. When was the turning point for Job? When did he get that hope again? And when did things start moving upward?
Well, I think you notice there is a turning point when God speaks to Job. Of course, that gets Job's attention. And Job reaches the final conclusion. I heard about you with my hearing, but now my eyes have seen you. Therefore, I repent in dust and ashes. Job grew in his relationship with God, doubtless. But then it's interesting, God comes to Job and says, what your friends have said about me is not correct. They need to ask you to pray for them and to offer up a sacrifice. And then when Job sacrifices for his friends, when he begins to reach out and minister to them, then we begin to see the turning point taking place. And that's where he's healed of the boils, and, you know, he begins to get back his possessions, and eventually his family's extended.
So it's really that moment that he starts reaching out. That's really significant. Now, this was a great story, but it's a really personal kind of a story.
Yes,
Chris, what was your favorite part of the story?
My favorite part of Job is the struggle in the middle, because it speaks volumes about God and our experience. Because struggle can be ugly. It ain't pretty. And as people are going through that struggle, sometimes they feel like, because of their feelings, that they're cut off from God. But God's shoulders are big enough to take their honest questions and struggles. And it really encouraged me in some very dark days to see that even through that, at the end, God honored Job. Never once was he rebuked for those honest, soul-seeking questions.
And this really helped you in your tough times?
Yes, it really did, because I saw that it's okay. It's okay to ask those hard questions. God wants us to be honest with him. And he's there, even though the storms are raging around us, even though we can't feel it, and we feel like we're sinking beneath the waves. He's there, and he will bring us through if we just don't let go.
And he's brought you through.
He has brought me through many times. Amen.
Wonderful. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
Rob, what was the best part of the story for you?
We haven't talked about it yet, but I like this part when God comes to speak to Job. You know, he talks about the fact that he's the creator who created everything, and where was Job when creation was going on. But I really like this part in chapter 41 where God starts talking to Job about Leviathan.
Oh, yeah.
One of these creatures that God has created. And the word Leviathan there in the Hebrew can be translated as serpent or the piercing serpent. And I really think this is a reference to Satan. You know, he's called in Revelation the serpent, that old serpent, the devil, and Satan. And basically, God is asking Job, you know, are you able
to control,
to deal thing. With the serpent? Uh-huh. Are you able to basically capture and conquer and, mm-hmm. and destroy the serpent, Leviathan? Mm-hmm. Which, of course, Job's not able to. And I think God may be saying here, and we talk about the great controversy theme mm-hmm. with mm-hmm. God and Satan, that God's trying to tell Job something. Look, with all that was going on in your life that you couldn't figure out, I was contending with the serpent. You know, that's mm-hmm. how the story starts out.
Yes.
The serpent accuses God and Job, you know, and so through the story, God is vindicated. And it's through God and his servants like Job and their faithfulness that Satan is defeated in his accusations against God and against God's people. Mm.
I've never looked at it like that before on chapter 41. Mm-hmm. This mysterious animal could really be referring to the devil himself.
Yeah, well, as
God
he described, his great
mastery.
Strength and, you know, it's
yes.
just a good picture there.
Oh, thanks, Rob.
Yeah, I like that.
John.
What I like about, there's so many things about Job, but what I
you've
like
gotta
about
pick just
the story,
one.
just one, is this. Satan makes these accusations before the whole onlooking universe with reference to God's character and saying, you know, Job just serves you because you've given him so many good things. Then, this is what I like, God stakes his reputation on one man.
The God of
before
the universe.
The whole universe, God says, I trust Job. I know Job. He knows me. Do what you like. He's going to be faithful. And we think of our trials. Is he willing to stake his reputation on me? He was willing to stake it on Job. And that gives me courage and hope. God loves us. He's concerned about us. And he's even willing to trust us with, at times, his reputation.
Wow. God entrusting me with his reputation.
Yeah.
That's quite a thought.
That is quite a thought. Mm. That is a big, big thought.
Mm. Mm.
And probably the heart of Job.
Mm. Mm.
Sorry, you wanted to say something.
No,
else.
I'm just pondering.
You're pondering this.
Yes.
It is a very, very big thought. Mm. Probably the Job's friends, this is something they don't get in their search to be judgmental.
Yes. Mm.
You know, it's interesting. Job's friends come to speak words of wisdom to Job and counsel him. But at the end of the story, it's Job that's counseling them because yeah. they didn't understand the big mm-hmm. picture.
Yeah.
And of course, there's lessons for us as we try to minister to others.
Right.
But more importantly, I think we can trust God, whatever the situation,
yes.
whether it's cancer, whether it's a loss of a family member, whatever pain and suffering we're going through, God understands. He knows. He's big enough. We can trust him.
We can trust him. Well, a big thank you to Rob, to Chris, to Jean. It was wonderful not having Job's comforters, yeah. but having friends with us this evening. I really enjoyed this dramatic story. If you came in halfway through the program and missed out on a part of our program, don't worry, all is not lost. You can go to hopetv.org/storyline and you can watch this episode and any other episode at your leisure. And if you want to share your reaction to the story, go to our website or post on Facebook and Twitter. And remember that Storyline is available in the iTunes Store as a podcast. You can download the entire episode and watch it on the go. So don't go anywhere. There's still more right after the break. We take out insurances, we try to eat healthy, we wear seat belts, And yet, there are no guarantees. Job's story asks the most basic of all questions. Why do bad things happen? The book of Job is a long book. Because even as Christians, there aren't any easy, quick, logical answers. But while Job's friends spend chapters trying to answer the big question, Job shows me that there's a whole different dimension to my life. There's that war out there between good and evil. And evil's never a fair player. There are always consequences, there are always casualties. But in the meantime, there is God, a powerful God who's much bigger than all the forces of nature. My pain, my questions are not unimportant to him. While I can't understand all the whys yet, I can trust him to work all things, even the terrible things in my life, together for good. Someday, I know there will be answers. There will be justice, and better than that, there will be restoration. And until that time, I invite you to hang on to God's strength in your darkest moments as you put the plot of your storyline in God's hands.